It's that time on the radio where we listen attentively to Bill Blevins from Blevins Ranks. Hi there, Bill.
Hello, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Good. Well, the UK budget was a few weeks back, the 2018 bill. We haven't really discussed it. So today, can we have a look whether it contained any changes that might affect expatriates?
I think there are odd things in here that expatriates need to pay attention to. It's always surprising to me that for many people who leave the UK, they tend to ignore UK fiscal announcements like the new finance bill, the budget, whatever you want to call it. The simple circumstances are such that none of us know for certain what the future will hold, and it's always a good idea to stay abreast of changes, especially at the moment with changes happening so frequently. So there were some issues that I'm sure are of interest to the listeners, the expatriate UK nationals who live outside of the UK. The income, if you've got income arising in the UK, if you've got a UK state pension, if you've got rental income, all of those things are taxable in the UK in the main. And as a consequence, if you have any other interests in the UK, clearly it's a very good idea to stay abreast of what's happening when they make budget statements.
Yeah, indeed. Well, how is the UK economy doing? I thought there was a bit of a slowdown compared to the Eurozone, but I'm not sure about that. Perhaps you can confirm. And did the budget include anything about Brexit?
Well, I don't think it's slowed down compared to the European Union, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, he suggested that he can foresee resilient growth over the next 5 years, and quite how he can say that with the uncertainty that Brexit brings to the UK economy, but he has to make assessments and judgments in concert with other advisers. But he upgraded the forecast for the UK GDP growth from 1.3% to 1.6%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but that's quite a substantial increase over his earlier forecast. But the growth, it is relatively sluggish. We don't have, and when will we have a Brexit deal? Who knows? And I think that the GDP forecast has really rather become something of a moving target. And as matters on that front evolve, so we will come closer to the facts facing us rather than the wishful thinking of a Chancellor who would like to continue to be a Chancellor. And as far as Brexit is concerned, he says that he has set aside £500 billion for the government's no-deal Brexit scenario. He was confident, I think he said, that there would be a double deal dividend that would be triggered by an orderly Brexit. And I think that's what everybody would want. If we're going to go for Brexit, it rather better that it's orderly than disorganised and catastrophic. The big boost to the British economy will, of course, be when there is an end to the uncertainty which surrounds everything to do with Brexit at the moment. And that will also, once we know in the UK, for example, what the likely costs are going to be, that will also free up the funds held as a sort of a fiscal buffer, which has been put in place for the no-deal scenario. But, like all politicians, Mr. Hammond has rather kept his powder dry, suggesting that he might make further adjustments next year, and said that he might even upgrade the now rather minor event of a spring statement to a full fiscal event. You might call it an emergency budget, if you like, if he felt that the budget Brexit circumstances necessitated such a thing. But, with such a lot of uncertainty still facing the UK economy, and less than 5 months now, 4 or 5 months until Brexit, it is sensible, I think, to take, advice on where you're going in the world, because at the moment, the uncertainty over the UK, its currency and its markets is pretty difficult to judge, volatile, to say the least.
Yeah. I think you spent some more than some observers might have thought, but there we go. We shall see what happens.
Yeah, but remember that spending, Howard, is an inducement to support. He is a supporter of the Remain side of the cabinet, despite the fact that he is operating effectively to bring about an orderly Brexit. He sits alongside Theresa May, and he's supportive of her current position. What that will be in the final analysis is yet to be determined. And when you are facing if you like, the end, as he called it, of austerity, you do have to make a statement financially to prove that what you said with your mouth you're going to take with your wallet, the actions with your wallet. And so he has said that, and so austerity is coming to an end, and as a consequence he introduced, you know, quite a considerable number of additional benefits, tax benefits, if you like, to try and evidence that that was the case. But of course, you know, politicians do one thing one moment and another thing another.
Talking about taxation, any changes to personal taxation?
Yeah, there were some changes to personal tax. I mean, nothing earth-shatteringly substantial. The personal allowance has gone up slightly from 11,850 to 12,500. And the individuals who are paying 40% rates of tax, the threshold for that rate rises from about 46,500 up to about 50,000. So, you know, there's a bit more earnings, net earnings, if you like, given the increase in the personal thresholds. What is good news is that personal tax allowances still continue to be available to non-resident British nationals. And that is, in a sense, in the face of suggestions to the contrary that came from the previous Chancellor, that those personal allowances should only be limited to UK residents. And we continue to see whether that will change in the future. We've got a situation, of course, where you need to remember that if you have UK source income, rental income, your UK state pension, they are all still taxable emoluments, if you like, within the UK tax system. And so you must keep your eye on what's happening here, what's changing here, to make sure you don't fall foul of the tax requirements, a tax return, for example.
Yeah. And what about ISAs, Bill?
Yeah, they're a very attractive proposition, ISAs. But it's very important the ISA limit, subscription limit, has stayed at 20,000. You can't actually make contributions to an ISA if you're not a UK resident, because the government have allowed ISA investors to build up substantial portfolios, which are essentially free of the major taxes in the main. But if you're an expatriate now and you've got a substantial ISA or an ISA of any sort, you need to be aware that the ISA loses its tax efficient benefit once you're no longer a UK resident. I mean, not only are non-UK residents, as I say, ineligible to open and save into ISAs, if you do have an ISA, the country in which you have decided to live didn't make the tax breaks. They were made by the UK government, and as a consequence, ISAs are almost invariably taxable, as opposed to being tax-free, in your new country of residence.
Bill, for listeners in Spain, can expatriates in Spain continue to hold ISAs?
It's a strange point, Howard, and it's difficult to be 100% sure whether that is permissible. But I think by default they can continue to hold ISAs. But as I've just said, you need to remember that if you are going to continue to hold an ISA, that the growth you make and the income that comes from the ISA is going to be subject to Spanish income, Spanish capital gains tax, and it will be an asset for Spanish succession tax. Now, You, if you took out an ISA and you built up a pot of money within this tax-favoured arrangement, what you've got to remember is that tax-favoured arrangement is valid under UK law, but it's completely taxable under Spanish law. What you can do, however, is you can relocate those assets into a similar sort of vehicle within Spain that gives you tax benefits within Spain, which are approved by the Spanish tax authority. And indeed, to be fair, the opportunity to save in a tax-efficient way is massively greater in the Spanish arrangement than it is in the ISA arrangement offered by the British. I mean, the simple fact of the matter is you can only put a limited amount into an ISA within the UK. There are facilities, structures, if you like, arrangements, if you wish, within Spain, where you can put virtually unlimited amounts of money and enjoy tax-free growth and tax-advantaged income, and you can even protect the assets from the worst impact of succession tax and UK inheritance tax if you're still liable for it. So if you've moved home with your body, you've got to sort of move home with your money, if you like, and make arrangements for the circumstances you're now in.
Yeah. Well, there was speculation before the budget it would include changes to pension taxation. Did those go ahead?
Actually, there was virtually no change to pensions. I honestly expected, and I think lots of advisers did expect, that we would see changes, because the Chancellor immediately prior to the budget gave a kind of a warning shot across the bow of pensions, saying that the tax relief given to pensions was eye-wateringly expensive, and then gave numbers about the billions that the government could save if they took away the tax relief on pensions. I think he rather simplistically, in my view, overlooked the negative side of taking away those tax advantages, in the sense that it would disincentivise people to save, and therefore place a perhaps greater burden upon the state in retirement. And to be perfectly honest, there isn't really, I would think, as far as our listeners are concerned, that there's, I think it's a reprieve rather than a definitive open-ended promise that there won't be any change to pensions legislation. The government have tried to collect every penny they can, and pensions does, as this Chancellor said, it does create an eye-wateringly expensive liability on the government. But who knows? They may take away the tax reliefs, they may not. At the moment, no real change.
Okay. And what about UK inheritance tax?
Well, I also expected that this might be another target, perhaps as a sign of the Chancellor's sort of relaxed attitude at the end of what he called austerity. There weren't any key changes. You'd hardly expect that to happen, given that the amount of revenue created by inheritance tax has exceeded all expectations, collecting in 2017 somewhere around $5.25 billion in taxes. And a huge proportion of that is down to the exponential increase in property prices and other real assets, equities, for example, over the last 10 or 15 years. Not something that, in my view, ought to be taxed so punitively. But he's left things alone, so let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that that goes on for the future.
Yeah, you mentioned property bill. Any property-related taxation changes?
Some minor changes that may or may not affect expatriates, really. He's made some further concessions to first-time buyers. He's extended the stamp duty relief to what are known as shared ownership homes, valued up to $500,000. That was backdated a few months as well. They're going to talk about a consultation. They're going to have a consultation about additional stamp duty charges for non-residents buying residential property. It seems bizarre to me that they're punishing at every level overseas buyers of property in the UK. I understand how people are sometimes offended by the extreme costs of wealthy property purchases, but you know, it does bring benefit to the economy in the long term. They employ builders, they employ swimming pool people, you know, all the rest of it. So I'm surprised that the government have taken this view about taxing at every level overseas buyers of UK property.
Yeah. Was there anything else of interest in the budget for our listeners in Spain, particularly those who visit the UK a lot?
I don't think so, but I think, just to reiterate what I said earlier, I think if you are returning to the UK frequently, you need to be sure that outside of the considerations of this recent budget, you need to consider whether you breach the not so long ago established statutory residence test. You don't want to break the residence test rules now that they're set down in statute, and that takes some careful and considered planning, because you know, overstepping the mark by accident isn't an excuse. And so I don't think there's anything in the budget specifically that is either of a disadvantage or of an advantage to people who return to the UK frequently. The biggest risk, if you're returning on a fairly frequent basis, is the more you pop your head up over the parapet, the more likely you are to find HMRC asking you some questions about your residence status. And at that point, you need to make sure you've observed all of the requirements of the statutory residence test. Perhaps we can speak about that at some other time.
I'm sure. Contact details, the website is a great source, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, all the offices of Blevins Frank scattered around continental Europe and slightly further afield, they're all available on the website at www.blevinsfranks.com. There'll be an office, I'm pretty sure, if you're listening to this broadcast, there'll be an office close to where you live. If you call them or send them an email, the addresses are within that that website. They'd be pleased to hear from you. As I say, it's worth keeping your eye on what's going on back in the UK, and at the same time making sure that you tie those changes into whatever changes might be taking place in Spain.
Well, thank you very much as always, Bill. We'll talk again in Spain at the same time next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Have a good week.